Our next guest, we're very happy to have on. Professor Randall Hansen is Assistant Professor of Geography in the College of Liberal Arts at the at UMD. He heads up the Sustainable Agriculture Project there, and he's helped create an experiential learning, research, and demonstration farm that works with institutions, local farmers, and provides internships for students. Randall, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is a big project. You know, as I looked at it a little bit, I noticed it kind of harks back to the early 1900s when food was a real problem in Duluth and the whole Northeast region.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a little bit ironic that here we are in 2015, sort of trying to figure out some of the similar things that they were working on in the early part of the 1900s. Our circumstances are different, but you know, we're looking to build viable food and energy and water systems that can, you know, do good for our region and be sustainable and long-term. And that was exactly what they were trying to figure out in the early part of the 1900s when so many people showed up to mine the ore and cut down the timber and so forth, and there was no agriculture in our region. And so, yeah, it's an ironic thing, but we're trying to rebuild a regional food system in a lot of ways.
You're a professor of geography there at UMD. How did you get involved in this major agricultural project?
Well, I do environmental work, environmental studies and so forth, and I have long been involved in experiential learning, and sort of came to the realization that, research about climate change and the needed transition ahead is, you know, still very important, but that we have to really invest ourselves into projects that demonstrate and work with the community to create solutions that we can accelerate, because the ecological and environmental changes around us are starting to happen with greater and greater, you know, intensity. And so, the farm, the SAP farm, the Sustainable Egg Projects farm, has become a site for exploring the connections between food, water, and energy, and how sustainability can happen in relation to each of those. In other words, sort of what we do in one realm impacts what happens in the other realms. And so as we look towards creating a more sustainable future, we need to work synergistically and think about the relationships between our human infrastructure around food, water, and energy, and how they interface with the natural environment, and how we're going to re-engineer how we live in order to make ourselves sustainable over the longer term. So that's kind of the things we're working on.
You know, as we think about food systems, we kind of take all these things for granted, that there's going to be a process for marketing, there's going to be a process for growing, there's going to be transportation, all these things. But they had to develop over time. And as I looked at your project, it seems like a lot of this is trying to do a better job with what was probably a system that developed, you know, with no overriding leadership.
Well, you know, I think there was a lot of different forms of leadership, but the goals that underwrote our current infrastructure, whether we're talking about food, water, energy, or any of the other sort of realms of our human infrastructure, were really all based on a sort of what people think of as a cornucopic model. In other words, that all these resources were available and we could sort of just do what we wanted, and that it was endless. It was a cornucopia. And, you know, the 1950s after World War II is termed the Great Acceleration, where our growing dependence and use of fossil fuels underwrote how we reorganized human societies all over the world. And GDP skyrocketed, and it seemed like a great thing. But, you know, from today's point of view, where we see these ecological and climate changes all around us, we realize that we live on a finite planet, and that industrial sort of command and control nature model doesn't really work anymore. We're creating too many problematic changes in how natural systems function, and we really have to reorganize all of our infrastructure more ecologically to interface better with how the Earth actually works. And so, you know, food systems is just one of these realms where, you know, the whole thing is really organized around the idea of unlimited oil, right? And cheap oil that is always going to be here. And you know, from today's point of view, we realize oil is finite, but even more pressing, the uses of oil create ecological changes, climate changes that that are really expanding in scale, and we really have to address this. You know, the kind of you know, arguments I think will continue, but the results are in, and we really have to face this issue seriously, and we have to transform our infrastructure in all of these realms fairly quickly, as far as human timescales are concerned, the next couple decades. And so, yeah, we have to think about our food and agriculture and how we're going to make that, you know, possible in a way that doesn't diminish the ecological functioning of our planet.
Now, your main project there, the Sustainable Agriculture Project, you ended up on the same piece of land that was used as an experimental agricultural area back in 1912.
Yeah, yes. And so that's an interesting example of the issues that I'm talking about in and of itself. You know, all across the state of Minnesota and really all across the country, our federal government invested in the experimental agricultural research station system to try boost agriculture production and figure out how we're going to reorganize ourselves for the new urban city world that was developing in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And so Minnesota, you know, through the University of Minnesota, the St. Paul campus, started six of these agricultural stations that corresponded to different soil and climate regimes. And here in Duluth, we had one. And it was a really, really important piece of the food and agricultural infrastructure for our region. We forget that, you know, in a very short time, 120,000 Euro-Americans showed up on these rocky shores in the woods, and they didn't have an agricultural system. And so in our region, you know, the what was called the Northeast Agricultural Experimental Station played a really key role in feeding ourselves, in growing food that was locally adapted and could supply a significant percentage of the food that was consumed here. But as the industrial food system took shape, the agricultural experimental stations changed, and our region, Northeast Minnesota, was looked at as rather marginal to industrial systems because of our climate and our soil and our hills and so forth. Didn't really fit that industrial equipment paradigm and so forth. And so the Northeast Experimental Station was the only one of the six that was closed in 1976. And so it remained essentially abandoned land for about 35, 40 years. And I guess from the point of view of the industrial ag system, it made sense. Our region doesn't fit that paradigm. But from today's point of view, like all regions across the United States, our Western Lake Superior region is trying to rebuild its food and agricultural system to supply a greater percentage of the food that we consume for all the ecological health and economic benefits that a local food system brings. And, we need institutional support for that, and it's exciting to think about how we can utilize this abandoned infrastructure to sort of participate in that process of rebuilding regional food systems and getting our young people involved in that and providing a platform for our community to work with the university and figure out what the solutions are for the new epoch ahead of us.
Randy, let's talk a little bit about some specifics here and what you do. Not only is food raised there, but it's also sold to the university system to give a better idea of how the whole circle works. You've also incorporated some other things like wind turbines to bring in engineering. And something that I don't understand that well yet until you do explain it, the Keyline Terraform system for controlling the drought and flood water conditions.
Right.
These are all things that help a whole variety of students learn about this topic.
Right. Yeah, so the Sustainable Agriculture Project then is a sort of a 20-acre organic farm that is basically a landscape-scale laboratory to explore the connections, what people call the nexus between food, water, and energy. As I said, sort of what we do in one of those realms in food impacts our water and our energy. And so we can't think sort of separately anymore. We have to think, again, synergistically and relationally like an ecosystem. And so what we're trying to do is set up a farm, but really, as I call it, a land lab that creates infrastructure for food, sustainable water, sustainable energy systems to explore the question of can we actually live on the annual ecological budget of this space? In other words, can we create the energy that we use? Can we harvest the surface water that we need instead of going after groundwater? And to what extent can we produce food that can feed a portion of the university system? And then that whole kind of problematic is used as a teaching and research tool. Can we do this? And how can we do this? And let's do it, and what are the mistakes that we make, and how do we learn from that? And so, yes, we're putting in addition to, 7 acres of organic agriculture under tillage this year, we also have this land, this farm-scale wind turbine that Allison Hoxie in mechanical engineering and Mindy Granley in the Office of Sustainability have really been championing, and we're also exploring ways to put in water harvest, larger scale water harvesting systems that, again, harvest surface water, the snow melts of the landscape. We're working to see if we can live off the annual ecological budget, and in so doing, in addition to teaching students, we're modeling for our region the presumed problems and solutions that might be useful over the longer term.
How about the water system that the catch and release? Can you kind of explain how that works as far as controlling water?
Right. Well, this is called something. It's a Keyline water system, and it was really developed in Australia. Where they've been experiencing greater amplitude of climate change than you know, many places in the United States. They're, in a sense, farther down the pathway of really feeling the effects of climate change. And so they wrestle with drought a lot. And so they've developed what they've called key lime systems, which basically, you know, instead of, you know, our system largely tries to funnel the water as quickly as possible into rivers, into the Mississippi, into the Gulf. And the way nature works is that it provides these sinks that absorb water and then permeate it slowly throughout fields and woods and systems in general. And so, again, the larger issue is how can we organize ourselves more ecologically? And so in mimicking nature with this keyline system, what we basically do is analyze the slopes of the fields that we use, and we're working towards installing these, in a sense, ditches that would have, you know, an embankment on the lower side, and on the lower side we plant deciduous trees, hazelnut trees, and that would stabilize the berms. And so snow melt and large rains, it seems routine that we can experience 2, 3, 4-inch rains now, and of course up to 11-inch in 2011, right? And so also in drought, how do we, create a system that can harvest the water? And so these key line systems create a kind of catchment along hills that then allow the water to stabilize there and then permeate slowly throughout the fields. And they've been used quite successfully in Australia to magnify the availability of water for all sorts of purposes. And so as we do that, we move from, using well water and even in Rice Lake Township where we are, some summers, some of the homes have problems with having enough water. And we need to experiment with multiple methods for how we lessen our hydrological footprint, and especially in agriculture that takes a lot of water, how do we, again, live on the annual ecological budget, the snow and the rain? How do we harvest that and then reuse that like nature does? I don't know if that explains it, but...
Oh, yeah. How many students yearly go through the various aspects of the experiential farm system there at UMD?
Well, there's different ways that students interface with the farm.
Sure.
Some are employed, some do internships, some do classes, classrooms that come out and do particular projects like analyzing soil or analyzing the insect populations, et cetera. But altogether, about 1,000 students a year come out to the farm and use some aspect of the landscape to learn about the kind of theoretical issues in an experiential way.
Now, how does you're creating a wide exposure for a lot of young people, a lot of students, and all the various ways that farming needs people to be aware. Is there a method of getting what you learn out to the general farming public out there?
Well, this is an iterative process, as they say, right? And we're sort of, we needed to build an infrastructure. We needed to build a farm, a land lab, as we're calling it. And, the next steps are really trying to figure out how to disseminate some of this information that's relevant to our community, our region, but also to provide a platform for our region to teach itself. I'm a firm believer that, the kind of top down management and or control of information or otherwise is, you know, we need to move away from that. There are so many people in our region, so many farmers, so many energy experts, et cetera, doing great work. I think the role of the university is changing a little bit, and I think the SAP Farm is organized around the idea that what we need to do is provide a platform for disseminating the learning that we can create, but also to create a platform for community members to come in and teach students, but also teach each other and ourselves about how we do this, how sure. we create a more sustainable future.
Okay. We've been speaking with Professor Randall Hansen, and Professor Hansen is Associate Professor of Geography down at UMD. He is heading up the Sustainable Agricultural Project at UMD, which we've been discussing here, in to help create a experiential learning, research, and demonstration farm that has been moving right along. When people listening here want to learn more about this, is there a website that you have or a place they can go to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, we use the Facebook page, UMD Sustainable Egg Project Farm, and also on the university website, if you Google the Sustainable Agriculture Project at UMD, you'll come to our website.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I want to thank you so much, Professor Hansen, for joining us tonight. It's a major project, and it's been a very successful project. I've been reading articles about it in various publications, and in that way too, you're gaining a lot of new learners. So, but thank you so much for giving us your time tonight.
Thank you. I'd say we're joining the learners, but
yes, there
and
you are.
Adding to that. So, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.